Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 25, Text Number 43. Jnana Vairagya Yuktena Bhakti Yogena Yoginaha Kshemaya Padamolame Pravishantyakuto Bhayam Jnana Vairagya Yuktena Bhakti Yogena Bhakti Yogena Yoginaha Kshemaya Padamulame Pravishantyakuto Bhayam Jnana with knowledge Vairagya and renunciation Yuktena equipped Bhakti Yogena by devotional service Yoginaha the yogis Kshemaya for eternal benefit Padamulam feet Me my Pravishanti take shelter of Akutaha Bhayam without fear. Translation: the yogis equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit take shelter of my lotus feet, and since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of Godhead without fear. Nice verse. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who actually wants to be liberated from the entanglement of this material world and go back home, back to Godhead, is actually a mystic yogi. The words used here, the words explicitly used here are yuktena, bhakti yogena. Those yogis or mystics who engage in devotional service are the first class yogis. The first class yogis, as described in Bhagavad Gita, are those who are constantly thinking of the Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. These yogis are not without knowledge and renunciation. To become a bhakti yogi means to automatically attain knowledge and renunciation. That is the consequent result of bhakti yoga. In the Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, it is confirmed that one who engages in devotional service of Vasudeva, Krishna, has complete transcendental knowledge and renunciation, and there is no explanation for these attainments, ahaituki, without reason, they come. This actually is an explanation, but it's not a cause and effect. It's Krishna's mercy. He enlightens the devotee causelessly. Even if a person is completely illiterate, the transcendental knowledge of the scriptures is revealed unto him simply because of his engagement in devotional service. This is also stated in the Vedic literature. To anyone who has full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual master, all the imports of the Vedic literature are revealed. He does not have to seek separately. The yogis who engage in devotional service are full in knowledge and renunciation. If there's a lack of knowledge and renunciation, it is to be understood that one is not in full devotional service. The conclusion is that one cannot be sure of entrance into the spiritual realm in either the impersonal Brahmajyoti effulgence of the Lord or the Vaikuntha planets within the Brahman effulgence unless he is surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. The surrendered souls are called akuto bhaya. They are doubtless and fearless, and their entrance into the spiritual kingdom is guaranteed. The verse again. Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yogena yoginaha kshemaya padamulam ne pravishanti akuto vayam. The yogis, equipped with transcendental knowledge and renunciation and engaged in devotional service for their eternal benefit, take shelter of my lotus feet, and since I am the Lord, they are thus eligible to enter into the kingdom of Godhead without fear. This chapter overall is a well-known chapter, often quoted chapter, very important chapter. The teachings of Kapiladeva, when persons hear his name, Lord Kapiladeva, it's immediately associated with Sankhya philosophy. And Sankhya philosophy is associated with like very cerebral stuff. Like, you know, analysis of matter and spirit and, you know, heavy duty intellectual stuff. That's because of its modern usage. And to a certain degree, to follow Kapiladeva's teachings on the gradations of matter and how the puzzle pieces fit together. If one is a little bit, you know, lazy upstairs, it's like hard to listen to that. But the essence of that is not some intellectual gymnastics or exercises. It's for discerning clearly, not sentimentally, but clearly, this is spirit, and over there is matter and categories of matter. And once the clear distinction is made, then the real thing follows, taking shelter of spirit. And then within the realm of spirit, there's the supreme spirit and there's the tiny spiritual spark. And then meditation by the spark upon the supreme. And then in that, because Kapiladeva appeared in which yuga? Satya Yuga, right? Satya Yuga. And what's the process for spiritual attainment? Most recommended in Satya Yuga?
Meditation.
So he's teaching a process of meditation. Meditation upon what? Well, let's get it straight from the Sankhya section that says spirit. And what's spirit? It's here's what matter is, and here's what spirit is, and here's the Supreme Spirit, and meditation upon the Supreme Spirit, fixing the mind upon the Supreme. How do you fix your mind upon the Supreme? Process of meditation requires separation, like vairagya, detachment from identification with matter. Because what happens when you identify with matter? Like besides, your brain gets mushy and your thinking gets unclear. There's attachment to fruitive work. From the wrong conception of I comes the wrong conception of mine. I and mine, like two peas in a pod. I and mine. Aham and mama. So if you have a wrong conception of I, certainly, like dominoes, you're going to have the wrong conception of mine. And that's what this world is. Starting with the false egoistic conception of I am matter, or more explicitly, I am this body, and, of course, my dear friend, the mind, those two coverings, that's who I am, then with the wrong conception of I, what follows is the conception of mind. And with the wrong conception of mind is fruitive intention. Karma. And karma bandhana follows karma. And, you know, that's material life in a really succinct nutshell. And then there's all varieties of it. There's this variety, there's that variety, modes of nature, karma, guna and karma, just like it's romper room. It's all over the place. Material life. So Sankhya is taking, it's that the approach of Sankhya is to go right back to the root and consider what's matter, what's spirit. Okay, we belong to the spirit category. We have a body, we have a mind, but that's not who we are. We belong to the spirit category. And now let's exercise the process of meditation upon within the realm of spirit. What's the object? The object is the Supreme Spirit. What's that? He's identifying that he is that Supreme Spirit. That's the previous verses that were being described. We discussed one of them yesterday. And those who are my devotees, they exclusively, the topmost yogi is one who exclusively fixes his mind upon the Supreme. Okay, I'm going to do a little quiz sections right now. What's chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita? Dhyan yoga. What does dhyan mean? Meditation. And in the conclusion of the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, there are different processes. The best of all the processes is yoga. So Arjuna, by all means, be a yogi. And then he says, amongst all different forms of yoga, one of them is the best. Question. What's that one that's the best? And what's the feature of bhakti yoga that he specifically points to? It's written in the purport. Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. What does that mean? Shraddha means? Faith. Shraddhavan. Van means one who possesses. Like Bhagavan. Bhagavan is one who possesses bhagas or opulences. That's Bhagavan. And Shraddhavan is one who possesses faith. Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam. Bhaja. Bhajan. What does bhaja mean? Devotional service. They engage in devotional service with their mind fixed upon me. So the topmost yogi is one who has their... Right, now read the purport. And it's not citing the verse that we just cited. It's chapter 6, text number 47. It's the last verse of the 6th chapter. Shraddhavan bhajate yo mam same yukta uttama. Uttama means topmost. There's, yeah, uttama, like uttama adhikari, kanishta adhikari, madhyama adhikari, uttama, topmost. So uttama bhakti, the first class yogi. So here's what Prabhupada writes. Those who are mystics or yogis are engaged in devotional service are the first class yogis. The first class yogis, as described in Bhagavad Gita, those who are constantly thinking of the Lord, the Supreme Personality, Godhead, Krishna, topmost. Okay, so what's what's the best means of always thinking of something. I mean, just take anything. What's the best means of always thinking of something?
Being attached to.
Like, you know, when I flew from Boston to Chicago, they lost my suitcase, you know, one of them. Fortunately, I had my clothes in the one that they didn't lose. But, you know, they were surprised that I was so detached. They're used to people, like, you know, flipping out and, you know, where's my stuff and what have you done and screaming and ranting and raving and, you know, behaving not very nicely. They were, like, expecting me to roar at them. But I, you know, so how can you... If you can be detached if you're attached to something else. And if you're not attached to something else, you're going to be not detached. Or, you know, supposing this happens in Mayapur. You go to the temple, you put your shoes somewhere, you come back and your shoes are gone. You know, you're used to having shoes. You can get another pair of shoes, but, like, you know, why go through the hassle of getting another pair of shoes? So why? What's the deal? Or, you know, young boy, young girl, he can't get her off of his mind and she can't get him off of her mind and woo, woo, woo. You know, so the attachment, you're always thinking of that object or person because there's attachment. And the most complete form of attachment is love. You know, it's one thing to be attached to your shoes or your suitcase. Another thing, being attached to a person. Another, being attached in love. I mean, not in spiritual love where there's no selfishness. That's like out of this world. Or as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, there's no love in this world. It's otherworldly. Real love is otherworldly. Real love is because otherwise it's selfishness. I want. You give me, I want, so we have this nice relationship. And if it's like otherworldly, then it doesn't matter what comes back. It's just giving loving service. That's the topmost form of attachment. And if we're not attached in that way, we're going to be attached to something else. So that's the reference embedded in the purport for Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 47. At the end of that very nice verse, there's some two very important references, one of which is also embedded in this purport. And that's the verse where Prabhupada says in the purport, to anyone who has full faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the spiritual master, all the imports of Vedic literature is revealed. Because that refers back to the first line, jnana vairagya yuktena. So there's knowledge. Yuktena means equipped, or Krishna endows his devotee with jnana and vairagya. And he makes reference to explicitly to the Canto 1, Chapter 2, Bhagavatam verse, where it speaks of if you worship Vasudeva, then causelessly you get knowledge and detachment. Anyone know that verse? Vasudeva Bhagavati? Bhakti Yoga? Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. No? Let's try it over here. You familiar with that verse? You want to say? Vasudeva. So it's Vasudeva, Vasudeva, Krishna, Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. For one who is engaged in the Bhakti Yoga unto Vasudeva, devotional service unto Krishna, causelessly. Vasudevi Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha Janiyati Ashu Vairagyam, Vairagya, detachment, Jnanam Cha, knowledge also. Ahaitukam. Ahaitukam means causeless. And that's what Prabhupada is saying in the purport. Ahaituki, without reason, they come. Knowledge and detachment, they're decorations. Like, you know, we dress the deity and Krishna dresses us. Not in, you know, ornaments and crowns, but he decorates us with knowledge and detachment. It's actually the natural quality of the soul, but it's covered. So he says, like, removing the covering, then you have knowledge and detachment. You have the natural, shining, enlightened state of the soul, which is knowledge and detachment. So now this reference from the last portion of the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 47. Prabhupada quotes a verse from the Upanishad, two verses from the Upanishads. One of them is from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, and it's a well-known verse. It's a nice one to learn. Yasya deve para bhaktir tata devitaka tata garo tasyaite katita yarta prakashante mahatmana. Prakash means manifest. Something very similar to bhavati. It's like, voila. And there it is. It unto those who become yasya deve para bhaktir tata devi tata guru, to those who are have implicit faith in the Lord, deve, in this case it means the Supreme Lord, tata guru, and the spiritual master. Unto those who have implicit faith in both the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master, that's the qualification for all the realization of the import of all the Vedic literature. Prakash, it just becomes manifest to that person. Here it is. Same as this, Jnana Vairagya. Krishna endows his devotee with knowledge and detachment. And again, how is detachment possible? Vairagya, you're attached to something else. And you can be attached to this, you know, ephemeral thing. Be attached to Krishna. Detachment doesn't mean, you know, callousness. I don't care. Let them suffer. It's not that kind of thing. It's not controlling you. You see what it is and you can act in an appropriate manner. But those who aren't detached, they're controlled. Their thinking is wired to, like, whatever the configuration of matter is for the moment. And their emotions are being tossed and turned and flipped, and because the material energy is ever in flux, and so the mind is, and so one's emotions are. It's like, you know, you're on a chain and just being dragged around, completely controlled by the illusory energy due to attachment to it. And the attachment to it is the default position. The real position is attachment to Krishna. You become attached to Krishna. Faith in Guru and Krishna. Knowledge and detachment is yours. Well, what if you're illiterate? No problem. Be illiterate, that's all right. I mean, I don't have to be a big scholar. No, you don't have to be a big scholar. What do I have to do? Have faith in Guru and Krishna. When you have faith in Guru and Krishna, then you hear from them. And when you hear from them, then it becomes realized. Not just like, you know, something that you can recite, you know, and when rubber hits the road, or when some difficult situation comes, real life starts to happen, you forget it completely. It was just rote mechanical recitation. It didn't go in. But it goes in if there's attachment to and faith in Guru and Krishna. Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir Tata Devi Tata Guru Tasyaite Katita Hyarta Prakashante Mahatmana. Very nice verse. I remember Chakri, did you ever meet Preraka? Preraka, book distributor years ago. Anyway. Well, he was from New York, and we went together to the Chicago airport, and he was a pujari for some time. You don't remember him?
No.
Preraka. He used to recite this verse regularly. He liked it. Yasya Devi Para Bhaktir. It's like... So, there's another one that's referenced at the end of the last verse of the sixth chapter, all about like fixing the mind, being the topmost yogi, fixing the mind completely. You know, try it. It's challenging. And one of the challenges that's like insurmountable is when there's fruitive intention. So that's what the other reference is, Gopal Tapani Upanishad. It's not just, you know, for those people that are super scholars and say, oh, rubbish to the Puranas and rubbish to the Bhagavad Gita. We're Upanishad fans. So here it is in the Upanishads, Svetashvatara Upanishad and Gopal Tapani Upanishad, that says, Naishkarmya. Not nice, but naish. Naish means without. Without fruitive intention. You know, like the the first third of Bhagavad Gita, according to our acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in particular, expresses that the first six chapters is a series of lessons on how to become detached from fruitive work, or Naishkarma Yoga, or Karma Palatyag. Nice Sanskrit words. You like Sanskrit. Detachment from the fruits of work. So many lessons and different angles and perspectives on it, on that. So, as long as there is, we'll say it the other way, as long as there is fruitive intention, what happens to the mind? It goes there. What if you're attached to being an enjoyer of mine, the fruits of my work, because I'm this body and the body works, so I get fruits from the work and I want to be the enjoyer of it. Whether it's my paycheck and the things that my paycheck buys and all my stuff, my house, my car, my, you know, my shoes, my suitcase. And I'm the enjoyer of this stuff. It's mine. And, you know, then one's mind goes there, and you sit down and chant, and the mind goes to those things that you're attached to instead of what you're doing. The mind cannot be focused as long as there is fruitive intention. And this was what Gopal Tapani Upanishad says. It's a prerequisite. Or the converse. Only those who are free from Naishkarmya can fix their mind upon the Supreme. So, how can you have, we'll go back to the other reference, how can you have full faith or implicit faith in Guru and Krishna if you're like not sure that they're going to give you shelter? I have to like hedge my bets. I have to go over here and take care of this thing, take care of that thing, and take care of that thing. Because what if Krishna forgets me? Then I'm, you know, like I'm an orphan. I've given up this shelter. That's one of Arjuna's doubts. What if you give up material shelter and you go to Krishna, you don't make it? You're like, aren't you in like nowhere land? Like a riven cloud with no position in any sphere? And Krishna says, no. Whatever progress you make, that's eternal. Even if you don't complete So that's one of the doubts of the faithless person. But one who has full faith, they just take shelter. Not blind faith, reasoned faith, but take full shelter. And whatever they require. What does Krishna say about whatever you require? Yoga kshema vahamyaham. Whatever it is that we require, Krishna provides. Something that we have, Krishna maintains. If Krishna wants to take it, try holding on to it, see what happens. It's gone. And Krishna wants to maintain it, let somebody else try to take it. Not possible. So what's our shelter? Is it stuff or is it Krishna? And this verse and the nice, wonderful purport is helping us to understand from this Gopal Tapani Upanishad reference in particular, as long as there's fruitive intention, the mind can't be fixed. When one becomes freed from fruitive intention, the mind can be fixed. But to take away fruitive intention, you have to have another shelter. Like what's eternal instead of what's temporary. If your shelter is in the temporary, your mind's not going to be fixed. Not possible. Because all that stuff that you're attached to, it's ever changing. It's the nature of this material world. Something that's unchanging about the material world is that it's ever changing. Look at the clouds in the sky. What happens? Or any configuration of matter, check it out and watch it. It changes. It's not just, you know, the weather in St. Louis. It's it's the nature of the material energy. It's always changing. Endlessly mutable in the language of Bhagavad Gita. And you're attached to that which is endlessly mutable. What happens to the mind? No, your mind spins. You can't stay focused. In order to be completely and fully absorbed in the Supreme, this fruitive intention has to go away. There's a similar verse, very, very nice verse. The Bhagavatam is very beautiful. So there's a nice verse in the teachings of Lord Rishabhdev. I'm going to go through it slowly because it's so nice. Who is Lord Rishabhdev? Father of Bharat Maharaj. That's one thing. He was an incarnation of the personality of Godhead. Because Nabhi, Rishabhdev's father, was a pure devotee, and he and his wife Meru Devi underwent great sacrifices and austerities and ritual performances of yajna for one purpose. Their focused attention was to have as their son Lord Vishnu. And who can do that? Because he's the father of all. But it was their rasa, parental affection. So Lord Vishnu appeared at the yajna that the brahmanas were performing and showed his form. Many nice exchanges of prayers by the brahmanas, and Lord Vishnu said, I will appear as your son. So he did, as Rishabhdev, incarnation of Lord Vishnu. And he had knowledge and detachment, and he was enlightening as a father is to enlighten his sons and daughters to transcendental knowledge. And this is an item of transcendental knowledge. It's knowledge, jnana, and vairagya. So the verse goes, Parabhavastavat abodh jato yavan najigyasata atmatatvam yavat kriyastavat idam manovai karmatmakam yena sharira bhanda. And I could take like a lot of time and go through the verse, but I'll shorten it and focus on this word karmatmakam. The second half of the verse, here's a Sanskrit lesson, yavat and tavat. Yavat and tavat. So this is like cause and effect. When you have this, then you'll find that. As long as this, then you're going to have that. So, yavat kriyas, Kriyas means kriya, activity, work. Not the same as karma, but similar. Yavat kriyas tavat. Like, you know, the it's spring. So many of the trees have nice flowers. The winter is like barren trees. But the season comes around and, you know, white flowers and pink flowers and, you know, very beautiful. And so like that little bud of all the little flowers caused by the seasonal change and the tree that's going to bear then leaves and so many other things. Seeds and fruits and flowers. So, yavat kriyas tavat idam mano vai. Mana? Mind. Idam mano vai karmatva kamyena shariravanda. The mind becomes colored. As long as there's fruitive intention, the mind becomes colored. It's like Los Angeles. You know, you look in driving along the freeway in Los Angeles, and what does the sky look like? Chakri? Smog. It's not blue sky, it's like smog. I was visiting in Beijing, and I thought, like, I couldn't figure out what was going on. It was like middle of the day, and it was like night. Because the sky, the atmosphere, there's so much industry in Beijing. The sky is like worse than Los Angeles. Double worse than Los Angeles. It's like almost night during the daytime. I said, what's that? And they said, oh, it's smog. Oh, my God. And people walk around with masks because there's so much smog. You know, booming economy and you can't breathe the air. Karmatmakam. The mind becomes colored. As long as there's fruitive intent, and when your mind is colored, you don't see straight. You know, you see something, and you don't see something. You see according to that coloring. Yes? I suppose you had, you know, purple tinted glasses. Do you have any yet? No? Okay. Just regular sunglasses. It's your favorite color, right? So if you have purple tinted glasses, what are you going to see? Purple. Or yellow, or blue, or green, or, you know, whatever, you know, that you tint. Or like, you know, there's a bulb and you'll paint that one blue and paint that one green. Paint. So the light that's going to come out is according to that coloring. So according to the mindset, that's how we're going to see life. It's not that's what life is, it's just how we see, because the mind is colored. It's colored by fruitive intention. And abodha jato. There's buddhi and there's abuddhi. Buddhi means intelligence, spiritual intelligence. And abuddhi is, you know, without it. Ignorance. Abodha jato. One takes birth after birth. It binds one. Not only to, like, you can't tell what's what, but you're stuck in the cycle of birth and death. Not knowing what's what. Bumping into walls and, you know, crashing into doorways and, you know, getting lost in the maze of material existence. Trying to, like, be happy. No good. Not a good program. So Rishabhdev is not advocating that to his sons. He's advocating the opposite. Let go. Same as this Gopal Tapani Upanishad. Where else can you go? What's the alternative? If this is like, you know, not a good program, where's the good program? And the good program is the first class yoga. That's the advocacy of Bhagavad Gita. Shradhavan bhajate yo mam, or this one. Jnana vairagya yuktena bhakti yogena yoginaha. Amongst the yogis, be a bhakti yogi who is equipped with jnana and vairagya. And so Krishna is describing his devotees, And then he says, Kshemaya padamulame pravashanti akuto bayam. Kshemaya is like, it's reference of time, and it's like long time, eternal benefit. The devotees are not interested in, you know, what's the weather today, as their happiness or unhappiness. Their interest is the eternal, sat. The lotus feet of Krishna, padamulame, my lotus feet. That's what they're interested in. And because of that condition and that condition, they have the final one, akuto bhayam. There, it's bhaya means fear, and they're without fear, akuto bhayam. The this phrase akuto bhayam is part of a. One of the nice things of this verse, one of the many nice things, is there are phrases that make up the verse, and those phrases are phrases that are found elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, and they're kind of like thematic phrases. Bo, 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 bo. Like classical music that, you know, the orchestra, there's a certain little series of notes, and those series of notes, they just play with it by the different instruments and then go off somewhere and come back. And it's like, so there's a theme in classical music, and there's a theme in the Bhagavatam. Certain phrases are thematic. This is one of them, akuto bhayam. And it's found, one of the first places it's found in the Bhagavatam is in the second canto, chapter 1, where the process of getting to the akuto bhayam is described, the process of the doubtless and fearless method of achieving what's up top. And that's the chanting of the holy name, Harir Nam. Harir Nam Anukirtanam. So here's the verse. Etan Nirvidyamananam. So this is Prikshit Maharaj speaking to Shukadeva Goswami, saying how much he appreciates what he's heard from him in the first canto, or, you know, what he's about to hear from him coming up. Etan Nirvidyamananam Ichitam Akuto Bhayam. Icha means desire. Those who desire shelter of the Supreme Lord, the doubtless and fearless method, akutobhayam, yoginam, nripa, my dear king, yoginam nripa nirnitam, harir namanukirtanam, harir namanukirtanam. The chanting of the holy name is the doubtless and fearless method to achieve this topmost first class yoga position. So, you know, what's our qualification? We don't have any. So I guess we can just like fold up the book and go home, because we don't have any qualification. But that's not the conclusion. Even for those that are illiterate and those that don't have good karma, they have bad karma, or like a nice little mix of good, bad karma, like that looks like a disqualification. And that's not so. The chanting of the holy name is the doubtless and fearless method of getting to this position. And so that's what we do. We chant Hare Krishna, and we hear the message that Srimad Bhagavatam is providing, that awakens and illumines our consciousness just by hearing it, even if we don't understand it, if we don't have, you know, nice faculties like, you know, Jiva Goswami or Rupa Goswami, or, you know, like very elevated souls, that's not us. but we just hear with faith, and knowledge becomes awakened, and detachment, because attachment to Krishna, starts to awaken through that cleansing and awakening process. So this is Kapila Dev's instruction to Devahuti about the process of devotional service. And that's the title of the chapter. The glories of devotional service. And there's only one more verse to finish the chapter. Any discussion? Yes.
I was relating this verse to verse in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2:41.
Yeah. Similar. And then the opposite. Bahusha ka hirantascha. Bhutayo vyavasayinam.
And then one more thing is, it says that you have to have a full faith in a spiritual master and a supreme personality of God. So, I mean, even the illiterate has been given the Vedic literature. So I was.
Wait. Say it again slower, because you speak real fast when you're just making point.
Anyone who has full faith in spiritual master and supreme personality of Godhead.
Yeah.
Even the Vedic literature has been revealed.
Yes.
So I was relating this to an incident of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu going to Sri Ranga on the, you know, the illiterate person reading the Gita.
Yes. Yes. That's the example. What's our Gaura Leela example? The illiterate Brahmana who understood the message of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord Chaitanya confirmed, you are the true scholar of Bhagavad Gita. Because of his implicit faith in his guru's instruction, who knew that he couldn't read and still told him to read 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita every day, knowing that he's not literate. And with implicit faith, he mumbled his way through. He tried. Because of the order of the spiritual master. Implicit faith. And implicit faith in Krishna. Okay? Yes?
Maharaj, I was thinking how I can work it out to have a strong faith and attachment towards Guru and Krishna.
How to? The process is hearing. The preliminary process is hearing. Here's a simple rule of thumb. Where you hear from, that's where your faith goes. Rule of thumb. You listen to television. What happens? You know, your head spins, but you know, so many commercials to tell you, you'll become happy if you buy this product, etc., etc., etc. You know, the news and like what's going on in the world, it's not, you know, has nothing to do with absolute truth. It has everything to do with whatever somebody says. And then somebody else says, so then you know you're deciding, well, should I? It's just where you hear from is where your faith goes. And then, next step, of those things that you hear from your spiritual master and from Krishna's Bhagavad Gita that really resonate, the next step is you apply it. Go to the laboratory of your life and apply it. And see what happens. Don't just like, you know, in one ear, out the other ear, but you apply it. And then when you apply it, what happens? Something happens. You get a realization. Wow, look what happened. And what does that do? It nurtures your faith. And then you go back and hear again, more carefully next time. And out of those so many things that you hear, something really resonates. Take that something to your life and you apply it. Like that. Faith increases. It works the other way. If you have, like, you know, somebody that's not a qualified teacher and they give some like ridiculous teachings and you don't like, you don't know for sure, and you go and apply it and you know it, something else happens. Like, you know, how do you develop faith in a physician? Same method. They give some diagnosis. That's one of the things that works really well with Ayurveda or other types of medicine where they can diagnose the symptoms from pulse. You know, they say such and such. I mean, the first time I went to an Ayurvedic physician, that was good at pulse reading. He said, "You have a pain in your right knee." I said, "No, I don't." He said, "Well, you will." Being an arthritic pain, it's going to happen. And something else, another devotee. This is another Ayurvedic physician, but they took their pulse and they said, "You watch too much television." I said, "I don't watch television at all. You know, this guy's, you know, nonsense. I don't watch television." And this particular devotee was in Vrindavan, and they had, as a volunteer service, they were helping to transcribe lectures. So they were sitting in front of a computer that had whatever you call that, and that, you know, they could tell it just from the pulse reading. He said, so they realized later it wasn't, because the medicine was good and it cured their problem. Why did they say it was sitting in front of a television? It wasn't. It was in front of a computer screen. You know, they can tell just by pulse. So, wow, that increases faith. Besides, the medicine was good and it cured the problem. So, as with a physician, so with a teacher, so with spiritual knowledge, your car mechanic, or, you know, something, somebody that actually has knowledge. And they apply it and it works. Wow, I have faith. Increases faith. But it starts with hearing. And then applying. Conscientiously. Sincerely. Yes.
Oh.
I think I'm going to make a rule. The rule is going to be no ums. I didn't correct your mom, I'm correcting you, and she's getting the message. She's coming.
Mom, did you get your suitcase back?
Huh?
Did you get your suitcase back?
Did you get your suitcase back?
Tulsi?
Suitcase.
No, I didn't get it back. It's been 3 days. They send me these courtesy messages that says, "We didn't find it yet." But if we do, we'll let you know. Which one?
The second one.
Second one. Bhojitanya's kirtan?
No, the one after that.
To the right?
Yeah.
Okay.
What pastime is that?
Where's Chakri? I was going to have Chakri tell the pastime.
This one?
No, Bhojitanya.
I always wondered about that.
I'd have to look closely. What it? Huh? Yeah, sure. It looks like the Panihati pastime. Because there's Lord Chaitanya. But they're not just taking chip rice and flat rice. Lord Nityananda and Advaita Acharya obviously another honored senior Vaishnav. Maybe Sarvabhuma Bhattacharya serving prasad to the devotees. that's what it is, in the Balabha Gardens in Puri. What it looks like. What you could do is you could take a picture of the painting and send it to the BBT and say, "Oh, can you verify what this is the pastime of?" That's what it looked like. Lord Chaitanya's associates honoring prasadam in a grove of trees. Jagannath Vallabh Gardens, perhaps. Anything else? Do it later. Do it later. It's too distracting. Anything? All right. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ki. Shri Prabhupada ki. Nantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.